This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing another segment on protecting your heirs, basic estate planning issues. About 5 weeks ago, I had a couple of really fine attorneys on the program, and they decided to come back, and they're here. They're specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, Dan Brown of the San Mateo law firm of Berilich Tagoni, and James Efting of the Sunnyvale law firm of Jackson and Efting. Both guests are members of the Advisory Law Commission on Estate Planning of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. This segment of Your Legal of Your Legal Rights, pardon me for jumping or tripping, is funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding of the program generally is made by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. The Board of Legal Specialization has 11 specialties, and they are appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, and of course estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. And I want to welcome you both back, Dan and Jim. Thanks very much for coming back.
Thanks.
Let me throw this out to you. Take a couple who've been married for quite some time, and they've had a piece of property they bought for a reasonable period of money, or for a reasonable amount of money, at a time when you could buy something for a reasonable amount of money, and today it's worth a lot of money. It's appreciated greatly. They're thinking that they might want to sell it. Versus, well, should they hold on to it and put it into their estate for their children or heirs? Jim, what thoughts do you have? What should these people do to begin with?
Well, I think what is important to remember is there are significant tax consequences of doing the wrong thing. And so it's important before they sell their property or move out of their property, they talk to either their accountant or an attorney to understand what their options are and ways that they may be able to avoid paying capital gains tax or keeping the property taxes on their property the way they want to keep them for their children. So there are options available, but it's important that they talk to someone before they make a decision rather than having made a decision and then talk to somebody afterwards.
Let me throw this one out to you. Take the same couple who bought a home maybe 30 years ago. Maybe it was 30 years ago, $100,000. Today, let's say it's $1 million, which isn't that terribly difficult to have happen, I believe. And so they're thinking, though, of going to some other area where the housing is cheaper. They're thinking that, gee, maybe we should sell this house, buy another house. Maybe it'll be $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. What comments do you have generally, Dan, about that?
Well, I'd follow up on what Jim said about getting appropriate advice. That can work out, depending on the facts, for the couple. It could also turn into a kind of a disaster. But there are a number of things that they could do.
When you say it could turn into a disaster, what are you thinking? What would be the basis of the disaster?
Well, they end up... One of the things that the couple might do is take a loan out against the property and then not be able to service the loan and then...
And lose the home.
Right, okay. As opposed to perhaps a better option might be a reverse mortgage, depending on the pricing and how that works out for the clients.
If they take a reverse mortgage, that means they're still living in the home, or does that mean they've taken out a reverse mortgage and they are, let's say, they're downgrading and getting another home somewhere else? What are the consequences there?
Well, if they're going to move out of the property, frequent with a reverse mortgage, there's a requirement that they actually continue to live in the
house.
So
you cannot leave the house. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. So that could actually result in a bad outcome.
What if they're thinking, you know, we want to downgrade. We want to get in a smaller home. We've got our kids. We want to leave them some significant property. Let's say the home they've lived in, this couple have lived in for 30 years, is worth $1 million or more. And they're thinking, gee, maybe what we should do is leave the home to the kids. We'll get ourselves another home. We have enough money that we've saved for a down payment for another home. And maybe they decide they're going to move into the other home. Maybe they're going to have their kids live in the original home, or they're going to rent it. What do you see as potential consequences there? If they're going to leave the original family home to their kids in their will or trust or whatever.
Well, I think we're assuming that they're not going to sell the house prior to the death of the first spouse.
That's my thought, yes.
Okay. So, well, that could, if the couple has enough money to put a down payment and qualify for a loan mm-hmm. on the second home, that could work out very well for the family. The house then would go to the children. Probably, I'm going to make some assumptions of the death of the surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be a step-up in basis for income tax purposes.
On the original family home.
On the original family home.
To the kids, okay.
Right, and there's also an exclusion available for reassessment for property tax purposes, mm-hmm. which if claimed and if it qualifies, would mean that the property is not reassessed for mm-hmm. county property tax purposes, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which is quite valuable to the children because we pay property taxes every year.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
Right. But one of the problems is if you buy a new house and you don't sell your old house, you can't move your property tax bill to your new house.
Mm-hmm.
So you may end up paying a significantly higher amount of property taxes on the cheaper house than you're paying on the more valuable house. Whereas if you sell the more valuable house then and you transfer the property taxes to the less expensive house, there could be savings there. So you really need to run the numbers.
Right.
But if for example, using my example of the original family home is worth on the market $1 million and they buy another home for $500,000, the potential capital gain here When they bought the house originally, it was $100,000. Now it's $1 million. The capital gain here could be as much as $400,000, couldn't it?
I think you just described $900,000 gain.
A $900,000. Okay.
Yes.
Even though, but they bought a $500,000 home. Doesn't that give them? Doesn't that $500,000 subtract from the $1 million, or am I wrong?
Well, I think you're referring to the old rule for rollover of gain on a principal residence, and that those laws changed, I think, some time ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so now what we have is we have an exclusion from gain. It's $250,000 per person on the sale of a principal residence. If a married couple files jointly, then it's $500,000.
Together.
Together.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if the depends on what we do with our fact pattern, but if we're only talking about the house being sold, the potential gain is $900,000.
Yes.
If it was their principal residence, then they could exclude $500,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's obvious from what both of you are saying that it's very significant that before anybody does anything, they get some very significant tax advice.
Absolutely. Yes. Because as Jim pointed out, the wrong direction without advice can be quite costly to the family.
You know, one of the things, Jim, that you brought up before we went on the air is if someone's estate plan was done at least 5 years ago, that it should be reviewed now. Why?
Well, the Congress has changed the tax law with respect to what we refer to as death taxes or estate taxes, so that while when many estate plans were done 3 or 4 years ago or older, the plans provided for the possibility of paying estate taxes. And nowadays, many people don't have to worry about estate taxes anymore because the exclusion has gone up to over $10 million.
Mm, I see. Okay.
So their plan may have provisions to avoiding estate taxes that you don't need, and there may be costs to implement that plan that really have no benefit or very limited benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people come in today who had estate plans done years ago mm-hmm. who have what's commonly referred to as an AB trust, and the AB Trust is not what they want today, and they need to get rid of the AB Trust or modify it so that they aren't burdening the surviving spouse with an irrevocable trust on the death of the first spouse.
It's my understanding that when someone goes to an estate planning firm, having both of you given me some input on this, that to do if you have some assets, you own a home, you have some stock perhaps, you have a 401k retirement plan or something like that, and you go for your initial consultation with an estate planning attorney for the preparation of documents, et cetera, et cetera, it could range anywhere from apparently a low of $2,500 to several thousand dollars, depending on how complicated your situation is. If you've had an estate plan that goes back several years, Jim, as you've talked about, and you come back in, let's say the person who has the plan or persons come into the same attorney, generally speaking, what can they expect generally in terms of the charge for reviewing the estate plan and perhaps modifying it? Can they expect a brand new anywhere from $2,500 to several thousand, or would it be more reasonable?
It depends in part on how involved the plan was and what kind of changes need to be made. Many times the changes aren't that significant, so it's not going to cost the same as getting a new plan.
Mm-hmm.
You don't rewrite the trust. You simply make changes to the trust.
I see. So the basic trust still exists, but there are changes you make.
Right. So if you created a trust in the year 2000, and so the trust has a creation date of the year 2000, you might rewrite it or amend it, but it'll still have that date of 2000, and that'll be basically the birth date or the creation date of the trust.
Is there any point with respect to someone's home that may be either John and Jane in joint tenancy or John and Jane as their community property? Those two different designations versus putting a home in a trust. Could you talk a little bit about that? Is there any advantage of people, whether they have the home in joint tenancy, which could have been how the title was taken if they bought it that long ago, but whether it was that or as their community property, is there any advantage to putting a home, changing the title so it's in a trust?
Well, actually, you're kind of...
Am I messing everything up?
Well, there's a few issues that kind of come together there. So let me first talk about the joint tenancy versus what may be in your fact pattern, Chuck, community property of the marriage. And that's something to get to the bottom of in talking to the clients. It is common for a married couple, been married for a long time, to come in and their home is in joint tenancy because it avoids probate.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the way the income tax rules work, there's an income tax disadvantage, when the first spouse dies. And it has to do with the step-up in basis. With joint tenancy, it's considered to be actually separate property of each spouse. So when the first spouse dies, only that spouse's half gets stepped up, where if it's community property or if it's labeled or tagged or titled in a way that the IRS recognizes, then both halves get stepped up when the first spouse dies, which is a big advantage for the surviving spouse. Mm-hmm. Whether it goes into a trust or not doesn't change that.
Doesn't change the tax consequences.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. So what many planners will do is they'll either do a separate agreement saying it's community property, or they'll put right on the grant deed putting it into the trust, that this is community property regardless of being held in trust. Mm-hmm. The other part of your question is, if the clients have a trust, then chances are they should be putting their home in the trust.
I mean, okay. And why? Why should they do that?
Well, because if clients do a trust, a primary reason of doing a living trust is to avoid probate.
I see.
And so one needs to retitle their assets into the name of their trust. Mm-hmm. If not, when that person dies, then if they have a will, it goes the property goes where the will says. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it may be a poorer will. If there is no will, which would be a bad outcome, then it would go under a set of default rules, mm-hmm. which is not – the plan was to route everything through the trust.
Let me – I know when we were preparing for the program just a few minutes ago, you both said that on this segment you'd like to take more calls. So I think in about 5 minutes or so, I will give the local phone number – and invite listeners to come in and ask you questions, make comments, et cetera, et cetera. But before we do that, I'm, as I told both of you, I'm going to do a program in the next month or two on planning for the end of life, where the focus will probably be on the importance of hospice, et cetera, and planning for it and making sure that your family members know that this is something that you want to do. What basic thoughts do you have to start having the listeners who listen to this program begin to think about planning for the end of life? Could you talk just two or three minutes about that a bit?
Jim, I can start please? On that.
Yeah, if you would.
My concern is for everybody, but in particular for unmarried couples, because the California law does provide some protection for married couples and end-of-life issues. But for unmarried couples, there really is no protection unless you create it yourself. The law basically treats you as roommates. And, you know, if you want your significant other or your partner to make health care decisions for you, to be in the hospital with you, to plan your funeral, you need to make specific arrangements so that person will have that ability to do that. You need to give them the power to do it. So it's important for all couples, but particularly unmarried couples, to have some serious discussions about, you know, what happens when one of you dies or one of you becomes incapacitated, who's going to make the decisions, and how do we make sure that what we want to happen actually happens, and that the family members who we may not care as much about, you know, step in and try to make decisions that are not consistent with what the couple wants.
If we have a couple who is unmarried and is not in a domestic California domestic partnership, and one of the partners or one of the unmarried persons has the home that they're living in only in his or her name, how should they deal? And of course, we can't talk about all of the specific legal issues, but how should they deal with this so that the surviving unmarried partner will be able, if that's what they agree to, will be able to continue living in the home?
Well, this kind of goes back to the idea of everybody should have a plan, and there are a number of different things that the couple could do, but having a plan and addressing what happens if the owner partner dies, the non-owner partner, does he or she get to live in the property mm-hmm, or not? Mm-hmm. Does it go to the non-owner partner under a trust or a will? Mm-hmm. But again, it's important to have the discussion and have a plan.
And it's important also, and I know you want to take some calls. It's important also, is it not, for people who, let's say the parents or the older person, if there are things of memorabilia, like the coffee pot came over on the Mayflower or whatever it may be, and instead of it going to the Goodwill, you want to let people know, by the way, this really is an antique. Jim, very briefly, how should people start talking with their family members, their heirs, about this kind of stuff?
Well, I think the children need to have discussions with their parents. Why is this where it is? What is this particular item? Why is it important to you, Mom? It may not be valuable to the rest of the world, but it may be valuable to the family. So you have to ask Mom or Dad why these things are important and what's their history, and then write it down so you've got it for the future. I mean, nowadays with videotape, you can, you know, sit down with your mom or your dad and put on the video recorder or your iPhone or whatever you have and say, okay, Mom, can you talk to me about this? Can mm-hmm. you show it to me? Those are nice memories to have. When Mom or Dad passes away, you can pull that out and say, yeah, I remember when Mom and Dad talked about how that hutch was given to Grandpa Joe or Great-Grandpa Joe or something of that nature.
So rather than listing these things in a will or a trust, what you're talking about is having some kind of documentation with a video or however, so that when someone dies, the family members will know what the significance is, so that they just aren't given away or sold at an estate sale, etc. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or you have something you say, boy, I wish I'd asked Grandma what this was.
Yeah.
Because it's too late after Grandma's passed away.
Yeah. All right, everybody. This is your chance, if you'd like to talk to my guest, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. If you're out of the area, if you're listening to us on the internet at www.kalw.org, you're also welcome to call in, and please do, at 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing another segment on basic estate planning issues. There's an awful lot to cover, and I think the basic thing that my guests are trying to educate you about, if you haven't done this, is that it's really crucial that you get some good tax advice if you have properties that have increased their appreciation. They've appreciated greatly. That you also get some advice from an estate planning attorney on what you can or cannot do. And so that's what we're doing. We'll do more estate planning programs. And look at this. Every one of the lines on the phone is now blinking. All right. Let me tell you, this segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Both of my guests are specialists, certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Dan Brown and Jim Efting. Dan is with the law firm of Berilich Dugoni in San Mateo, and Jim is with the law firm of Jackson and Efting. And that's in Sunnyvale.
Yes.
So we're covering much of the Bay Area here, and I want to give you a chance to call in. Steve, welcome to the program.
What a great program, and especially timely. I like your advice that people talk about this beforehand, because things occur either expectedly or it can be unexpected. And I think it's also interesting, and with the guest address, as you said, the non-traditional. We had an instance where my father and his brothers, so my uncle, were co-owners of their home down in Florida, and this is on a golf course. Well, they were the only one that had that case. So we went, and then when my father was getting towards the end there, my sister looked over the papers. She's an attorney. And then we found where they had it in there, so it was undivided, and my uncle can stay there as long as he wants, and then when he sells the property, that's when the division would be made. But in the interim, he pays all the HOA dues and the taxes and things of that sort. And that's very good. And then he wanted us to do like a quick claim deed, and she's, no, let's just wait for that. So I think it's very interesting that there's a lot more non-traditional things that are in place and setups that people have nowadays.
Did you have, Steve? Did you have some specific question or point that you wanted my guest?
How do they address these? It is very easy to say for a married couple or community property, but what type of work and things would they recommend for non-traditional?
Very good.
Businesses?
Okay.
Great.
Very good. Thank you very much for calling. Yeah. What further comments do you have for him?
Well, are we talking about a non-married couple?
Yeah. Well, let's say non-married couple, or perhaps they're like, as he said, two brothers who own this property. What comments would you have there?
Well, two brothers owning a piece of property, they may have some type of agreement. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we call it a buy-sell agreement, but an agreement that addresses what happens if one of them wants out or one of them passes away. Now, for a non-married couple, um, where I've gone with it with clients has been they each have their own trust, mm-hmm. and then I talk through what the ramifications are from an income tax standpoint and a property tax standpoint. Frequently, my same-sex couples own many pieces of real property, so it's really an involved conversation.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff to think about.
Yeah, there's a lot to think
about. In terms of how you would prefer, and I presume before a client comes into either of your offices to speak with you, you have sent to them or provided to them some kind of a questionnaire to kind of have them start thinking about and listing things so that they just don't come in the door and sit down with you on the other side of your desk and you start asking them about this, that you would have before you something that they had prepared. Is that generally what you like to do?
We send out questionnaires ahead of time.
Yeah, okay. All right. Any comments that you have with respect to Steve's points?
Well, sometimes life insurance is a good way to deal with that issue. If it is available, you could have one or both of the co-owners buy some life insurance, or the family could buy some life insurance to be able to buy the other one out when the one passes away. It's not always the answer, but it's one possibility.
Very interesting. All right. Let's see. We've got JP. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, Chuck.
Hi.
I currently have an estate planning portfolio, which includes a living will and a living trust, and it was drawn up for me about 3 years ago. And I wanted to make some changes to it. Some relationships have changed, and I wanted to, you know, put some people in, take some other people out, or change percentages of, you know, who gets what. So my question is, what's the best way to amend that trust? Do I need to see somebody, or can I just scratch names out and write in other names, and how does that work?
Okay, that sounds dangerous to me, but turn your radio back up, JP, and we'll get some comments for you.
Okay, thank you.
I am not an estate planning attorney, but what you are talking about as what you would do on your own sounds dangerous. What do you think, Jim?
Well, first of all, you need to know how to change the trust. Each trust is written slightly different. Although under California law, you can change your trust any way you want to. When you wrote the trust, there may be specific tests or requirements in order to make a change valid. It may require to be witnessed. It may require to be notarized. That isn't required by law, but some trusts do contain those provisions. So you want to know how you can amend the trust to make it effective.
All right. It's just about 7:27 and a half. This is the end of the statewide version. And when I said earlier a few minutes ago, there's an awful lot to talk about. Time goes too quickly. That's the problem. So this is 91.7 KLW, your local public radio station in San Francisco. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are here, who were here with us about 5 weeks ago, Dan Brown and Jim Efting. They're both certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law. If you are listening to us live, and you must be, I presume, you can call 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. All right, let's take I've cut you off, Jim. Finish what you were talking about, would you?
Well, the other thing I wanted to say to JP is sometimes if you're changing who the beneficiaries are, you really want to take the other people's name totally off the document so it doesn't show up anymore, in which case you might do a restatement of your trust. Whereas if you simply are changing the percentages, maybe all you need to do is an amendment, which is fairly simple. There are just a couple of ways you can change the trust. But sometimes people say, I don't want to have this person mentioned in my trust anymore. So then you do a restatement. It's the same trust, same name, but it's a new terms.
Are you saying in terms of JP talking about this, about scratching out a name or writing in a name and initialing it, I take it you're not suggesting that he do that?
No, because it's very difficult to realize whether he did that when he passed away or somebody else did it.
Oh, well, sure.
So it's much better to do it in a document that says this paragraph no longer applies. This paragraph is the replacement paragraph.
Would that be amended trust document be such that, of course, JP would have to sign it again and it would have to be witnessed?
It depends on what the document says. Mm-hmm. The original trust may require it to be witnessed or it may not require it to be witnessed.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I always thought that that would be. Would it have to? If it was not witnessed originally, would it have to be notarized?
A trust does not have to be notarized to be valid.
Okay. Right.
Unless the trust document itself says it has to be notarized to be valid.
I see. All right. Any other comments on this?
Dan? Well, I was assuming JP had his trust originally prepared by an attorney. I would suggest he go back to that attorney and talk about the changes. That would probably be the most efficient way to affect the changes that he wants.
One of the things that I'm concerned about for people in the law is that I think most lay people think attorneys are very expensive, and many attorneys charge $350, $400 an hour, etc. Some are cheaper, but I think that that's unusual. And thus, the average, let's say, non-lawyer average person is saying, gee, I'd like to be able to do this without having to pay that much per hour. And they do this themselves and get themselves in trouble, which can end up being a lot more expensive than if they put the money into as perhaps an investment of good legal documents. Jim, could you comment on that for just a minute?
Right. The problem with doing it yourself is twofold. One of them is that you may not do it right, so what you want doesn't occur. The second one is that if you don't do it right, people may fight over it, which means you're going to end up paying more money to lawyers than you would have paid to do it right the first time. So by doing it right, spending a little more money the first time, it's clearly written, it's clearly understood what was intended, at least it should be.
Let me give you a question that comes in from one of the listeners brought into the studio here. What about a mother who predeceases her husband, and she wants to make sure that their children will receive some inheritance from their estate and not get cut out completely, should the husband remarry? What can the mother do while she's still alive, other than kill the husband? Of course, I hope you all know I'm being facetious.
Well, the what the woman could do is provide that at her death, and this is just one idea, one example, that her share of their combined property or her separate property is set aside in a trust for her husband's benefit, and then at his later death, it goes to her children. Mm-hmm. And that's frequently how we insure against the concern that listener expressed.
Any other comments on that?
Sometimes I'll also, again, going back to life insurance, I don't sell life insurance, but I do use it. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, why don't we maybe purchase a life insurance policy that says when you die, the kids will get a certain sum of money right then and there. Then you know they've got that money, and then the husband can have the house or the other assets retirement plan.
Okay.
So you can say, I want to give certain assets to my kids now, and then what my husband or my spouse does with the rest of it, I won't worry about because I've done what I've wanted to do.
Okay, let's do this. Marie, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you very much for a wonderful program. I have a question about an institutional executor, someone that I might not be familiar with personally. And if the will is written and you have maybe two beneficiaries, but you have items maybe of consequence that you'd like to designate and you list these items, how are you assured that these items handled by the executor and how does he handle them? How are you assured of, especially if the parties are not in the area, how are you assured that these items will eventually get to the beneficiary and I don't know how these things work, how they handle them.
That's good. That's a very good question. Such as certain special jewelry or
Or furniture or something of that nature. How is that handled? How is it delivered?
All right. If you'll turn your radio back up, Marie, let me get some comments for you.
Thank you so very much.
No, thank you very much. That's a very good question. Dan, what about that?
Well, Marie mentioned an institutional trustee.
Yes, so institutional executor like a bank.
So assuming that it's a bank or a trust company, they have, first of all, they have fiduciary duties to carry out the terms of the will or trust to protect the assets, to insure the assets, and make sure that they're there for the beneficiaries. With a bank or a trust company, if they don't do their job, the beneficiaries have somebody to go after. Also, a bank or trust company is regulated by either the state or the feds, if it's a federally regulated bank. So there is some comfort or assurance there. My experience has been with bank and trust officers that the concern that Marie expressed would, which is a very real concern, it would probably turn out to be a better outcome than a non-professional fiduciary.
A family member, for
who
example.
Just doesn't, who just doesn't understand all the issues that come up. Yeah.
And would, generally speaking, if a bank or trust officer was involved as the institutional executor, would the bank have or the trust company have a bond that would be available should they conduct themselves negligently and not do this, or is that not the case generally?
Well, actually, the probate code waives the requirement of a bond for a corporate trustee, but that's based on the fact that the corporation, to have a charter as a trust company, has to establish it has assets.
Under California law.
Under California law.
I see. Okay.
Yeah,
so there's that added protection, whereas
correct.
Your family member or some close friend, or perhaps, and please contradict me if I'm wrong on this, or maybe an attorney who's set up as the executor, although attorneys usually have malpractice insurance. It sounds like it's there's more protection through the California law with a bonding with a bank or trust company.
That's my point of view.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Pardon me, Jim. Go
if
ahead.
I add to this, it would be helpful for the trust company if Marie would take pictures of these items that are important to her and make notes about them and give them to her attorney or to someone so that when she does pass away, they know what to look for. Because oftentimes when the financial institution comes in, they don't know whether this is something that's important or not. If Maria's taken pictures and said, this is important, this is what I want to go to this person, then it helps the bank follow through.
That's very good. So I hope, Marie, that this is something you feel would be helpful to you. Support for KOW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call that one. Of course, during normal business hours, it's 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during business hours, and you should be able to get a human being. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation. And throughout most of California, most of the bar associations throughout the state, for a half an hour, the cost would be, and it doesn't go to the attorney, it goes to the bar association, $25 up to $35. And it's a great way to start to get some basic information. All right, for those of you who've tuned in a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on basic estate planning issues. The number 1415-841-4134, whether you're listening to us in the Bay Area or on the Internet. My guests are certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law. They're also both members of the Advisory Law Commission on Estate Planning of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, and they are James Efting and Daniel Brown. All right, let's see who we've got now. We've got, we have Stephen. Welcome to the program. Stephen, are you there? I think we put Stephen to sleep. Let's try Gabrielle. Gabrielle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I'm in a predicament that I need some advice. I'm an owner of a house, C senior, and they're building next to me, and I'm worried that I won't have an income because I'm renting out, and that's my sole income. And therefore, I wanted to basically give the house to my niece and her husband in Canada because they offered to help me out financially. But we are running against a lot of problems because they're in Canada. I'm here. I'm a senior, and I cannot refinance because for a lower rate because I don't have enough income.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Gabrielle, what is your question?
The question is, what can I do to give the house so they don't have to pay all the property tax?
Mm.
Because they can't afford that. They would like to help me for old age.
Okay.
You know.
Let me ask you, what city, where is your home located? What city?
San Francisco.
It's in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
I think, if I may suggest this to you, Gabrielle,
mm-hmm.
Did you get the phone number for the San Francisco lawyer referral number?
Is that the 989-1616?
Yeah, I think you should, my suggestion is you should start by calling them. You'll be talking to someone live on the phone,
okay,
and have at least an initial consultation with uh-huh. someone who does estate planning.
Okay.
That's a start. But
okay.
One of the things I want to tell you with respect to yours is a somewhat complicated question
mm-hmm.
with some significant issues that may come up here, uh-huh. whether or not there might be some potential for elder financial abuse, possibly, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
what I'd like to do, my guests will more generally respond to you, but I think you really do need some help,
okay,
professional help directly with an attorney. But if you'll turn your radio back up, we'll get some comments for you.
Okay. May I ask one more quick question?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
Is there such a law as asking for money because the people who are building next to me, they're getting very close to my house, and it will impair rentals. Also, I already cancellations.
Let me stop you for a moment, yeah. Gabrielle. Do you think that they are trespassing on your property?
Well, we had a pre-meeting, and I protested, but there's not much we can do because.
Well, are they doing the work on their own property?
They haven't started yet.
They have not.
Yeah.
And have you contacted the building department?
Yep. Yep.
And the building department can't help you?
Not yet. No.
Not yet.
You see, we're just protesting, and I have seen around here they're building like four houses.
Oh boy.
It's Noe Valley, and it's going crazy.
Yeah.
And
I think we're getting into stuff that my guests may not be able to help you with. It may be that you want to also talk to a real estate attorney about this. And find out what you can do. But if the building department, frankly, isn't being of any assistance to you, I'm not sure that there's much that can be done. But I think that's why you need to speak
right.
to an attorney. One of the things I want to let you know about, if you have the time,
mm-hmm.
we will do our Call a Lawyer night at the end of this month, the last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be the 30th, I think. Oh, no.
Okay.
It'll be the 23rd. I think that's the fourth Wednesday of the month. We will do Call a Lawyer night that night. I will have one of the attorneys who's here for Call a Lawyer night will be here, I'm sure,
mm-hmm.
Frank Adam. And I think what you want to do, if you can wait another 3 weeks, I think what you might want to do is call and speak to him
right.
for Call a Lawyer night. And kind of get some direction from him because he is a real property attorney. He's also a tax attorney, et cetera. But turn your radio on. I want to get my guests to come up with some thoughts for you, okay?
Okay, very good. Thank
All right,
you so
Gabriel.
Very much. And I turn the hang up, right?
Yeah, hang up and then turn your radio back up.
All right, thank
okay.
you.
Yeah, don't hang up and then turn your radio off unless you don't like us. Who wants to start with Gabrielle? Dan does.
Well, I think your advice to Gabrielle was very good, and she should sit down with an estate planning attorney and talk through what she wants to do with the potential beneficiaries in Canada. I thought I heard her say she wanted to make a transfer in a way that there wouldn't be property tax right. on the property.
That's what I heard, yeah.
And I don't think that can be done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I can't.
You can't say for sure, but we don't know.
Right. Yeah. I can't add anything to that.
Okay. Okay. Jim, anything?
I think a real estate attorney is the right choice. There may be some options. She may be able to exchange the property for some other property that is more suitable to her desires. I would encourage her to not gifting would be kind of the last resort. I think there are a lot of options. She just needs to talk to a good lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Gifting would not be a good option. And what concerns you most about that?
Well, there's the basis issue.
Okay.
For income tax purposes, then there's also, assessed value for property tax purposes. Given, and I like Jim's idea a lot, that maybe if she just got into a different property, it would work out better for mm-hmm. her because she is living on the income from the property, too.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, Gabrielle. All right. We have Heidi. Welcome to, or is it Hedy?
It's Hedy.
Hedy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I want to ask, thanks for a wonderful program, by the way.
Thank you.
It's really, really interesting.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to go back to, you started off with, buying and the issues of selling. I live in San Francisco. I'm a single, long-time divorced individual. I have a house that we paid nothing for and is now worth a small fortune.
Yeah.
I probably will need to sell it because there are too many stairs.
Mm.
And I think it's practical to think about selling it and buying something that has less stairs and probably less room. And one of your guests mentioned that you can't transfer your taxes. Well, you can. In California, you can transfer taxes once within either your own county or a county that will accept that.
That's correct, as long as you sell the first house to transfer to the second house.
Right. So is that – I have three children. I do want to leave them whatever it is I can. I cannot – I don't have the – I mean, I have savings, but the most – of my assets are in this house, which is probably worth close to $2 million, which is crazy now.
Yes, it is.
So I want some of that money to live on.
Mm.
So is the best option to sell, to buy, pay the taxes, et cetera, et cetera? Or are there any other options?
Well, should she turn her radio back up also?
I'll leave that to you, Chuck.
Yeah. Okay. If you'll hang up, Hedy, and turn your radio back up, we'll give you some comments. Please understand this, everybody. My guests are very, very experienced estate planning attorneys. However, the state bar's ethics rules do not permit my guests to give specific legal advice. And, of course, practically speaking, you can understand that. We just don't have enough time to get all of the facts involved. And so when we get a question like this from someone like Hedy, who's got this $2 million home and it was purchased for practically nothing originally, there are a lot of very significant issues and potential tax consequences. So please understand that my guests have to more generally respond to try to give you some direction. So, Dan, if you would.
Sure. Hedy has a very valuable asset, and there are a few different ideas. A reverse mortgage might be one, but that may not be the right one. Selling might be ultimately what she might decide to do and use the $250,000 exclusion. What I suggest she does is sit down with an attorney or her accountant and look at different alternatives and then run the numbers on what she ends up with at the end of the day.
Well, if she – the $250,000 exclusion, still, if she has a property that is on the – that is market value is $2 million, what basically would that mean? if there's only a $250,000 exclusion. She's still got a very significant gain tax, does she not?
Yes, she does.
But she's also got a very valuable piece of property. And so this property is something that they spent a lifetime acquiring. It's an asset. It's like a stock or something else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that the asset should be used to take care of her at this time of her life.
Okay,
right.
You know, taking care of Hetty is important. That's what the asset's there for.
Of course.
If it needs to be sold to take care of her and provide a quality of life, the quality of life is very important. So you want to run the numbers, like Dan said, with somebody who's competent, but then you also think about, you know, quality of life. What will provide you with a good quality of life? That home can provide a good quality of life for someone. You've got to pay some taxes to get the good quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Pay the taxes and enjoy the quality of life.
Well, I hope you get the good tax advice that you need, Hetty. So good luck to you. All right, let me see. Who do we have next? We have Elaine. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thanks again. Thank you for having this show.
Sure.
I have a house that I bought a long time ago. I have a trust, mm-hmm. and it was dated in 1999.
Mm.
Do you think laws have changed since then, or do you think, because I do have some areas that I would like to change on my trust, should I redo the whole trust, or should I just get amendments?
Well, the law has changed significantly since 1999. The tax laws, the estate tax laws, have changed quite a bit since then. But also, California law dealing with the transfer of assets at death and how trusts work and wills and that kind of thing, the law continues to evolve. Mm-hmm. Whether your trust can be amended depends on what needs to be changed,
mm-hmm.
What's changed for you over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's actually less expensive just to amend and restate the entire trust as opposed to doing a very long series of amendments. It,
mm-hmm.
it really, really just depends on what needs to be changed. You would keep the same original date in all likelihood of your trust and just amend and restate, which to me is like changing the engine in a car. You keep the same vehicle ID number, but you put a new engine in it, and that's how I think of amending and restating.
Is the attorney who helped you with your trust originally, Elaine, is he or she still around?
I don't think so, because I think there was they took them to court or something. Did you guys ever hear of James Walker?
James Walker. I have not heard of James Walker.
No, I haven't.
He was an attorney that hired people to go out and sell trusts.
Oh.
And something went wrong, and so they're no longer in business.
I see.
Well, in that case, I would recommend you take your trust to someone who's a good, qualified, experienced estate planning attorney. Have them review it. It may be perfectly fine. It may not. But the laws have changed. We've made a lot of improvements to trusts over the last 15 years, like we've made improvements to cars. And having it restated might be a good idea, just so that you've got some comfort that it's going to do what you want to do when you pass away.
Elaine, where are you? What city?
I'm in Berkeley.
In Berkeley. Okay. Do you have something to write with?
Yes.
I'm going to give you the both the phone number and the website for the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. It's my suggestion, based upon my guests who are certified specialists in estate planning, that you probably want to contact the California Board of Legal Specialization,
mm-hmm.
ask to find out, either by phone or you can go to the website, who the estate planning attorneys are in your area, the certified specialists in your area, and make an initial appointment to go in. So here's the phone number.
Okay.
415-538-2100. And do you have access to the internet?
Yes.
Yeah, you can go to the Cal Bar's website, www.calbar.ca.gov,
mm-hmm.
calbar.ca.gov. And then over on the left-hand side, you will find a couple of words that are legal specialists, both those words.
Mm-hmm.
You click that on, and then you'll be able to put in Berkeley, and you'll find out who the certified specialists in estate planning are in your area.
Oh, good.
And then it's up to you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I should have it reviewed, I think.
Well, that's what my guests are saying. That's what my guests are saying. You got to do it, dear.
Yeah. Okay,
bite the bullet. Don't be, penny wise. What's that old phrase? Penny wise and dollar foolish?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good luck to you. Yeah, take care. Bye-bye. All right. I think we have time. Did you have something, Dan? No, okay. I think we have time for one more, and that's Ed. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Do you have a question that maybe will go no longer than 1 minute?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I have a trust. My mother has a will, and the trustee is my sister, and she's very difficult to get along with. I'm thinking about changing trustees. Should I? The money has, the house hasn't been sold yet, so the money hasn't gone into the trust. I'm on SSI, and so I have to deal with that. And
did you, Ed? Did you have an attorney help you with the trust?
Yes, but he is the family attorney, and the family at this point, the executor is my other sister, who's even more difficult to deal
with. All right. Where do you live?
Does he represent me or does he represent her? All this is back.
Ed, let me stop you. Where do you live? Ed.
I live in Berkeley.
Okay, all right.
My house is in Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, my. Wow.
And so it's a Baltimore trust. It's Baltimore law.
Okay, let me get...
Doing the trust? Should I do it before the money gets into the trust?
Ed, stop. We're nearly out of time. Hang up and turn your radio back on, will you?
Well, maybe I can talk to you.
All right, stay on the line, but no further questions because we're just about out of time. What comments do you have for him? This is not a simple matter.
No, it's not.
He's got to start with talking to an estate plan attorney here in Alameda County to get an idea of what can be done here in California. It may very well be that ultimately something's going to have to be done in Maryland or in some other state. But he should start with an estate plan attorney in California who can explain the details, because it's hard to really understand all the facts from what we've been told here.
Oh, sure. And we don't have time and can't answer his questions either. Did you get the phone number for the California Board of Legal Specialization, Ed? Ed, are you there? I guess he did hang up. Ed, if you are there listening, my suggestion is you also, as Elaine, contact the California Board of Legal Specialization at 415-538-2100 or go to the CalBAR website, www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the left of the screen to legal specialists and find out who the legal specialists are for Alameda County or Berkeley or whatever, and make an appointment. Start there. You've got enough issues that you've got to be very, very careful about what you're doing so you don't make some major mistakes. Well, I want to thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you
for joining us again on the program, and been great having you. My guests have been certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, Daniel Brown and James Effning. Thank you, gentlemen. I will ask you to return because we have a lot of people who have questions for you that we can't even get to. All right. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights, this segment, has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding of the program is the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we are going to be talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act, consumers' rights, and business owners' obligations. My guests will be a couple of very knowledgeable people who I hope you will join us with. Steve Schrabman, who's an architect. He's also an ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act compliance expert. My other guest will be American Disabilities Act compliance attorney Martin Orlick. So that's next week on Your Legal Rights. Again, we will have our Call a Lawyer night on June 23rd, 1-800-525-9917. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Vinnie.